The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
We're delighted to have Maggie O'Farrell back with us. Her new novel is called Land. Maggie, thank you so much for being with us. The last time I think you were in studio with us was around the publication of Hamlet, which is a good few years ago now. You have had work out since Hamlet, but I suppose because of all of the publicity about the movie and the success of the movie, it's going to focus more attention upon Land. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's always nice to be here with you, Matt. And the film, yeah, the whole film experience was so surreal and so strange. I will never forget it, but it was a very interesting experience to kind of dip my toe in that whole world. But it was quite nice to come home again too.
But I suppose it does open up, though, the potential of many, many new readers, doesn't it? It may be that there were people, because of the movie, went to read Hamlet who hadn't read it, who'll go to The Marriage Portrait, who'll go to many of your other novels.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I've always felt that the film sits alongside the novel. You know, it's very close to the book in terms of theme and interest, but it's, you know, it is also its own thing. It's kind of, it's Chloe Zhao's image of the book.
Yeah, but you were able to keep more control of it than most novelists are of their work when it's adapted, weren't you?
I was very lucky. I was very lucky in that, you know, the film was produced by incredibly talented people, you know, from Chloe, the director, to Paul and Jesse, the actors, and, you know, everybody who worked on the film was absolutely the top of their game, right from, you know, the cinematographer to the people who sewed the costumes, you know. So I was incredibly lucky. But also, I you know, I really trusted Chloe's vision of it. You know, it's not nothing to hand over your book to a group of people. But I was incredibly lucky. I think I was a very, very lucky author to get Chloe as a director. And certainly with the cast, they were amazing.
I understand you've already handed over Land as a potential movie.
Well, I'm also handing it. It's the rights have been bought by Liza Marshall, who is the producer on Hamlet. And we're still, it's very early days. We're still talking about various people who might want to direct or star in it. But it's quite exciting. But I think, again, I think I would want to be involved in the writing of Land just because it's quite a personal book for me.
Indeed. This is your most Irish book, isn't it, of what you've written?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And this, in many respects, could be one of the great famine novels because it actually is really an emotional journey through 19th century Ireland. So tell us what prompted you finally to write about your homeland.
Well, this is a book I've been thinking about and circling around for a really long time. So I've always been interested in the life of my great-grandfather, Liam, in the book. He became a Jesuit, which is not something, you know, that happens. I don't think it's a decision you take lightly in life, and it's certainly not something that happens easily or accidentally. So he became a Jesuit, and then later in life, he left the Jesuits, which I'm pretty
sure. Very unusual back in the 19th century.
Very unusual. And he became a mapper, like his father had been. So that's always fascinated me. I mean, it's such an enormous thing to decide to commit your life to the church and to become a Jesuit, and then an even more enormous thing to leave it. But then the fact that also his father had been a mapper, that really interested me. I thought it's very strange to go so far from your father's job and influence and then come right back to it. And we didn't really know much about his father, my great-great-grandfather. So I went looking for him in the archives in Dublin, and he was very hard to find, mostly because at that time, if you were employed by the Ordnance Survey, which had strong connections with the British Army, if you were Irish, you were not allowed to sign your own work. You did all the work and the British officers signed it for you. So he was very difficult to find. I mean, I could find work that I thought was his, but I couldn't be sure because his name wasn't on it. I could find his name on certain things like ledgers or wages. But I found a document which said that he'd started working for the Ordnance Survey in 1848.
Just after the famine.
Yeah. And I was that date just stopped me in my tracks. And I thought I couldn't imagine what it would have been like to be doing revisions to the map, the whole map of Ireland on that date, when given that the whole country had undergone this cataclysmic change.
Because what you explain brilliantly in the book is about the importance of maps and how in that period, so many of the things that would have been noted and measured and put down into this graphical form were gone, disappeared.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, when the Ordnance Survey began mapping Ireland in the 1820s, they had a rule that no Irish people were allowed to work on the maps. But they discovered about 10 years in, the whole mapping was supposed to take 7 years. It took over 20, partly because the Irish weren't involved. And of course, there were terrible language barriers. And also,
which is why Tomás, your central character, right, was employed, as well as being able to draw the maps, he could speak to the locals and get the information.
Yeah, and also get accurate place names, you know, because of various, people who've owned the land in Ireland and the land has been passed on, or, you know, in the Ordnance Survey, they describe it as land being redistributed. But I think that's not a very accurate word. It's more like stolen.
Well, indeed, and that's what comes out really strongly as well. I think people will be really taken by almost the casual nature in which the names of places, the Irish names, were erased, anglicised. Even Tomás is known as Tommy to his British paymasters.
Well, I saw in the archives in Dublin, there was a letter from a man called Seamus O'Sullivan, and he was employed like my great-great-grandfather, and he said, please, can I call myself Seamus O'Sullivan? And the answer was no, you are James Sullivan in the Ordnance Survey.
There's an awful lot as well, almost casual cruelty depicted in the book. I mean, even, well, again, one of the central characters as a young girl, her name is changed when she's thrown into the workhouse without any regard for the fact that she has a name that she was given and that people might come back for her. The cruelty as well of the coffin ship been sent off to Australia, children been in the bottom of this boat. It's actually quite shocking. Were you shocked when you went back to discover about this era, to bring it to the page?
I was deeply shocked. I thought I knew quite a bit about the famine, but I went, I read as much as I could lay my hands on, and the true stories were so shocking that I tried to put them into the novel. So the story about the character in the novel, Fina, whose name is changed on entering a workhouse, and is based on a child that I read about. And also there was another child who, the person who recorded her entry into the workhouse said she was from Killarney, and actually she was from Killary. And when her father came back from the States to try and find her, he couldn't find her because of this administrative error, and he went back to America before they realised. And that story, it was like someone had driven something through my innards.
You've changed that story slightly in the book, but it actually has the emotional punch as you tell it in the novel as well.
Well, it's true. That's because I based it on a real story. And I, just the idea of this one child having one parent and them not finding each other because of one tiny slip up.
But I also, well, I got the impression it wasn't even just a slip up. It was just that people didn't care.
Yeah.
And people didn't care for the poor and the starving.
No. Well, there was an edict saying that the workhouse needed to be a terrible place in order to discourage people from going in, that they wanted people to work instead. So they were deliberately structured to be a tortuous, terrible place to be.
Did you get angry as you researched as to what had happened?
I think when you read about history books about the famine, I think it's a mixture of anger and just so much grief, you know, and just actual disbelief that something which seems sort of medieval could have happened so recently, you know, and was happening, was supposedly governed by a country so close, and but apparently it was of no interest to that country, or they didn't really care. And the fact that Charles Trevelyan, who was in charge of famine relief in the British government, called the famine an act of God. It was, you know, a form of punishment for an idle, ungrateful, unself-reliant people, were his exact words. And a year after he wrote that, he was given a knighthood for his work in the Irish famine.
What did it do for your own sense of Irishness? I said, I mean, you were born in Derry, but your parents were from the south, weren't they? And you moved over to Wales and then Scotland at a young age. So, but you've always been very conscious, haven't you, about having very Irish parents, and you would have been one of the generation that came back on a regular basis for summer holidays to Ireland. Absolutely. So you are Irish.
Yes. I mean, you know, I'm hesitant, Matt, to say that. I know how bad it sounds in my very British accent to say, yes,
it's not very British, in fairness.
I don't know what it is. My accent's a bit vague. But yeah, I suppose, I mean, I think I've never felt, I think what happened was I was offered an OBE for services to literature, and I was very grateful. You know, I was very grateful and honoured to be offered it. But it was about the same time that I was researching the famine, And I also knew that Charles Trevelyan held a knighthood. And I refused it. And I said in my refusal that I was very grateful to be offered it, but I couldn't accept it because Charles Trevelyan had one and he still had it. It's never been revoked. And I think it should be. And I said, on that grounds, I can't accept.
Fair play to you.
And I don't think I've ever felt as Irish as when I wrote that letter.
And what was the response? Did you get a reply then back in turn? No.
I didn't get one.
Your name is struck off the list. We never give her another offer again.
She's not getting a second chance, but that's fine.
Yeah, so, but growing up, you were very conscious of your Irishness, were you?
Yes, absolutely. So we did come back every summer and we had relatives. My grandparents were in Dublin. We had relatives in Donegal and in Galway. So it was always a huge important part of who we were. And also, you know, being from Ireland in Britain in the 70s and 80s, you were made to feel it.
And
not
in what way?
Not in a good way.
In what way?
Well, you know, relations between Ireland and Britain were in a bad place during those decades. And it was constant, you know, the kind of comments we would get, sometimes a lot of Irish jokes where, of course, you know, always the Irish person is structured as being the stupid person. And it ranged from that, which was relatively benign, to teachers who were taking the register at school who would look at my name and then they would say, oh, is your dad in the IRA? You know, and this is to a small child. And of course,
how do you answer that when you're a small child?
And what, you know, I mean, essentially you're saying, is your dad a terrorist? And even when I was, you know, I was working in an office in London in the 90s and my dad would phone up and one of my colleagues would say, whenever your dad calls, I always think we're going to get a 5-minute warning. And at that point I would say, you know, first of all, my dad's from Dublin. Second of all, he's not a terrorist. He's an economics teacher. And thirdly, that's really offensive. You know, can you not see that that's not okay to say to me?
And then what was the response to that?
And they go, oh, you're so touchy. But it's, you know, I mean, my parents remember a time when they would go to Britain and there was, you know, the terrible signs up in cafes and B&Bs, you know, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs. And I think things have improved. I don't think these days I hear so many jokes now about terrorism. But I don't think it's because necessarily people are less racist. I think just unfortunately newer waves of immigrants are
being targeted
and bearing the brunt of that instead, unfortunately.
But hopefully the Irish who are well established in Britain haven't joined in that racism in the way that has happened in the United States, where an awful lot of the Irish in the United States seem to be happy to pull up the ladder after them.
Yeah, that's not a good way to behave, is it? I mean, racist, it's never okay to be racist, is it?
I suspect though a lot of people, when they read Land, are going to perhaps, it'll get maybe their nationalist blood boiling a little bit, the sort of the treatment of people.
Well, I think, you know, I think it's important. I think it's hard to imagine if you are Irish or you know a lot about Irish history that, you know, you think, oh, obviously we understand the famine and we understand the causes and there's been a huge amount of study and reading, you know, that wasn't for a long time, but lately in the last 100 years or so, there has been. But I think outside Ireland, people don't know as much about it as they should. And it's important, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but there are more famines coming, you know, due to the climate. It's something we need to think about. And it's something we do need to face for the future. But I don't think Britain has come to terms with it or faced their role in it. And I don't think other people know about it. You know, my husband read it. My husband's a Londoner and he read Land and he said, I had no idea. I had no idea it was like this.
If he's a Londoner, he's in a city. What does he make of the incredible descriptions you have of countryside? You clearly love countryside, do you?
I do. I really wanted to write a depiction of Ireland. I mean, the word Ireland doesn't appear in the book anywhere, or the word Irish, or the word England or English. But I wanted to write about, you know, land is such a potent phrase and idea in Ireland in terms of ownership and, you know, the waves of people who've assumed control of it. And I wanted to write a history about it, the whole thing from the Ice Age to the 20th century, all via one small plot of land.
But it's also about identity, isn't it? Could easily, as easily almost have been called identity.
Yeah, I think Land maybe is the best title.
No, I'm not cribbing with the title. I'm not saying it should have been a different one.
I think it is. I'm just really interested in the idea of mapping. You know, humans were making maps before they could write. They were drawing maps and it's a way, on one hand, mapping is a way of saying this is where I am and this is where I'm going. But it's also, you know, in the later centuries has become a way of assuming control. You know, you can't dissociate mapping from colonialism.
Where's the Maggie O'Farrell career map going now after this?
God, who knows? Who knows? We'll see. We'll find out. I'm not sure yet. I've got a few ideas what I want to do, but I'm very superstitious talking about things I haven't started or finished yet.
Oh, you're not working on something new yet?
I have started. Yeah. But I can't tell you, Matt, because I just feel as if I talk about it, then I'll just drain myself of the desire to write it.
Okay. And do you want to do as much movie work in the future as still writing a novel, which is very, very different, the main thing that you want to do?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a born novelist. That's always what I've ever wanted to do and what I want to continue doing. But I think I realised doing Hamnet, I was so lucky with the collaboration and the people I was working with then that I realised how important that is with films because it's such a collaborative process. So when hopefully the right people will come along for Land. And
you're not going to be defined by Hamnet. I think it'll be by your entire body of work, including Land, which is absolutely terrific read.
Thank you,
Maggie O'Farrell. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Matt.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.